SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 20 plus into hour two, and apologize to Sid Fernando. Conversation with Paul Matisse, though, had to get through it, and wanted to make sure that all the angles were covered, much like the computer robotic wagering teams, the angles that they had covered as well. And in fact, Sid, not that we talk specifically about, you know, the wagering marketplaces and so forth with you all that often, but you did unearth some old apocryphal stories when it comes to, you know, these topics. I saw that you dug deep into some microfilm, it seemed. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. No, I found your discussion very informative, entertaining, listening to it. I did want to add a couple of things to it. Yeah, I kind of am interested in some of this because a very good friend of mine runs a hedge fund. They were at the vanguard of HFT, high frequency trading. And it's all really about technology and the ability to make trades within nanoseconds. Now, what you have here with the tote is you have an archaic technology system, for one. The other part of it, and I'm going to add something here. I had a very long conversation yesterday with Chris Rossi, who's extremely familiar with the tote, how wagering is posted. And, you know, he made a really good point that as wagering has migrated to the home arena versus actually the brick and mortar, the track part, you know, everybody wagers from home now. You're using a computer to wager anyway. What's happened is there's so much, and it's interstate and whatnot. There's a lot of this stuff comes down to the mundane, really, that some of these wagers can't, that some of these pools can't, they can't post them because of legislation that, you know, makes them batch it together at a certain point before they can send it in. So coupled with technology of the tote and the way it's mandated legislatively that certain batches have to be sent, that you know, once they reach a certain threshold or at a certain time, that is also a cause for some of this stuff that appears to, you know, fluctuate odds. Again, it gets back to how quickly can you have the technology be so that the lag isn't, say, 20 seconds, but, you know, on a perfect storm, in a perfect world, it's zero. And, you know, the other side to this is when you do advance that technology, when you do get to the parts in technology, say, as you do in the stock market, where you have a perfect zero time, no lag, you also playing into the hands of the guys that are these computer wagering, you know, CAW or however you want to put it, high-frequency traders. They have that technology to capitalize. So the better the technology you get for the tote, the better it is for those guys as well. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword in a lot of ways. It's not a bad thing because in the stock market, you know, most of these guys are the market makers. I mean, they're the guys providing a lot of liquidity to the marketplace. So it's, you know, it was interesting hearing Paul's take on it. It's interesting to read Bill Finley's investigation of it. But it's also interesting for me personally to have discussed this with Chris Rossi, because some of this is just down to the mundane, as I just said earlier. And if you go back to the days when, you know, you and I were at the track and guys were punching tickets in and 5 minutes of post and odds change, you know, there's always late money coming down, whether it's stable money or whether it's at that point, a gaming syndicate that, you know, has to punch their tickets in, whatever it is, you know, it's part of the game. And I agree with what he said. I mean, none of this is really a nefarious thing. It's just something that in this particular case, as you pointed out, and he did, you know, it just became really publicized with the dramatic drop and the fact that the horse won by big margin.
Yeah, exactly. And the focus that, frankly, the Derby manages to to influence everything, right? Because you know, here you had three horses. When I wrote the race up, 15% of the Derby field shows up in the Dwyer, and you know Mendelsohn, there's extra interest in him, and it's just pretty. It kind of says a lot about the sophomore racing landscape, how much interest that, and you know the aftermath when it comes to the classic trail, excuse me, and of course now we're getting into the. You know, the regional Derby season. They'll draw the Indiana Derby today. We had the Ohio Derby. We got the Los Al Derby. You know, there's West Virginia yet, Pennsylvania down the road, Oklahoma, etc. So we keep an eye on these horses. One funny aside when it comes really to the wagering standpoint, Sid, the presence on the card Saturday of two takeout neutralizers, because not only does Mendelsohn manage to reprise his you know money taking from Derby, but my right. boy Jack, my boy Jack, a very welcome sight to those that I don't mean to beat up on him, but for those that played Catholic Boy. I mean, another takeout equalizing presence. My boy Jack, I didn't understand him running in this race. No how. It made no sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't either. But you know, the group that owns him, and that includes Ubiquitous Sol Cumin. I mean, these guys are, you know. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. That you got that right. Well, they can't. I'm going to assume that they'll look back toward the dirt assignments, and I'm anxious to see what we get for a field in the Los Al Derby today, because. You would have thought that would have been, you know, to stay home and run there, that long stretch would suit his kick, and it would have been a great prep for whether Haskell, I mean, little Haskell comes up pretty quick, but Travers, whatever he's going to do, I did appreciate coming out of the weekend that you do sense that Firenze Fire may flirt with longer races again, but I was heartened to hear Ron Lombardi say that the Alan Jerkins is their summer goal, and Catholic Boy, another one, maybe flirting with the dirt, but it just feels like he's demonstrated himself to be a really good turf horse and dogged, and I don't know what benefit there would be to, you know, going back to the dirt at this point with him, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think in the case of Forensic Fire, Steve, you know, he won the Champagne on this track. He's now won this on this track. He's 2-for-2 at Belmont over that same mile. And you would think, as all these, you know, after the post-Triple Crown is when horses really start to fit into where they're supposed to be. Everybody wants to go into the Triple Crown if they have a shot or not with a credentialed horse. But, you know, afterwards, the horses, the deck gets shuffled and horses go to where they're supposed to run, where they have the best chance to fit. And you see this every year, obviously. You know, go back to the big hard spun Curlin year, Street Sense, and it was hard spun that dropped in for the sprint, right? And so with these horses, Forensic Fire, that's a great target for him. In the case of Catholic Boy, it's really interesting. I think that would be La Penta. I think I read somewhere where he would, you know, that's like a dream race for him, the Travers. And again, you get a horse now that stays. He's had some dirt form. So I guess, you know, you try him there because you have a chance now to capitalize on his stud value. It's almost like a Triple Crown race again because he's a Grade 1 winner on turf. You get that marquee Travers under his belt, and, you know, his stud value escalates. So there's that element to it as well. But, you know, so, you know, obviously he's a more than ready and he's really bred for the turf. He's shown it in Glass Two races. Have been, you know, obviously fantastic. In the case of, you know, my boy Jack, I don't know. But those guys won, you know, $700,000 with that horse. And I guess it's always, you know, create causes. It's on the Giant's Causeway. And you take a shot on turf to see if it works that way, too.
Well, we'll monitor and we'll keep tabs on the fields as they come together. And, of course, I suppose, Sid, we could include the Justified news and what feels like maybe a harbinger of him not getting a chance to thrill everybody later in the year. So we'll see. But it does open up, obviously, the field to, for everybody else. Gives some other horses a chance. We'll see how that turns out. I suppose.
Yeah,
that's.
Go ahead, Steve.
I just want the more than ready portion of the equation. Because if we think back to the passing of Scat Daddy, and I more than ready to me, I've often referred to him as a poor man's Scat Daddy, and this is another, you know, notch in his belt, another stripe on his shoulder, more than ready.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And the horse is actually, funnily enough, he stood for more than Scat Daddy until Scat Daddy was scheduled to stand for 100,000, which he didn't. He died the year before he did. But this is a horse that he's got two sides to him that people really were not familiar with here. The one side was that he was phenomenal in Australia, where he was standing for six figures, was one of their top sires, shuffling there every year. He had a reputation, in fact, being better there than he was here. in his later years, he's really picked it up here, and he's now considered, you know, just, you know, a very top-level stallion here as well. He had a even though he was, you know, he ran fourth in the Derby. Incidentally, Scott Dandy and he were raced by the same guy, James Scattercino. How do you pronounce it?
Scattercino. Scattercino.
Yeah, right. And both horses were raised by the same guy. And both became extremely high-class stallions. The longevity to More Than Ready has been a part of his success as well. And now he's really, you know, starting to get the horses here. He had the Champagne winner a few years ago, Daredevil, who's at stud right now at Windstar. This colt is going to be a highly sought-after stud prospect. You know, and he's showing that he can get, you know, dirt form as well, which is which
well,
is
you mentioned
good.
Daredevil. Perfect yeah. segue, Sid. Let's talk about the sale yesterday and some of your thoughts as to what we saw. They had a lot of first crop stallions and their first high profile opportunity with the yearlings. Of course, some of the first crop weanlings, you know, last fall and winter might have been procured, but different story when the yearling market starts. Some thoughts about yesterday.
You know, this is a sale, Steve. This version of the Fizzy Tips in July sale, it's a great sale to highlight young horses. You saw a lot of young horses, young stallions with either just three-year-olds or two-year-olds or mostly in a lot first crop yearlings really predominate the sale, mixed in with, you know, some proven stallions. It's a sale, really. If you're looking at the sales calendar, July is a sale for more mature, earlier mature yearlings. So, you know, you'll find either older yearlings, that is horses born in January or February, or horses that have just matured earlier. That's where you have your best shot in a sale like this. I think that flatter that topped the sale was the January foal, for example. But interspersed here, as you saw, horses like Palace Malice, you know, had a terrific sale. Young Horse at Three Chimneys by Curlin. You had Will Take Charge. Both of those two horses, by the way, stand at Three Chimneys. If you looked at the top five prices for fillies yesterday, they were all by Three Chimneys horses, Strong Mandate, Palace Malice, or Will Take Charge. So it's, you know, it's a great spot for the new stallions and a harbinger of what to expect next month at Fraser Tipton, Saratoga, and then as we get into the bellwether Keeneland sale in September.
No doubt, looking at, you know, some of the, as I like to do, some of the less heralded types. I love panning for gold. There were yeah. a couple of pops that were stunning. How about that Strong Mandate filly that the Lieblongs bought, 435?
Yeah. Yeah, and they brought a Strong Mandate two-year-old sale for, I think, $550. You know, a lot of buzz on him. He's got his first crop running this year. So it's his now, but won the G1 Hopeful at two. Really good-looking horse. Great family. And yeah, he catches your eye. Obviously, this is a horse that stood for, God, I want to say, I don't want to
think it was 10,000.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot.
Yeah. So that's a great return right there.
Well, and you mentioned the family, not just for him, but the family, the female family here, and the Liebelungs, they're doing a little bit of breeding, and of course the big beast is standing, and you know, they've gotten a little more active on that front, but basically they're buying into the Phipps females here with this filly. That had to be a big part of it, right?
Yeah. This filly has everything going for her, including Personal Ensign as the third dam, and My Flag is the second dam. The dam is Fly the Flag. She's an 11-year-old mare. But if this filly were to become a stakes winner, for example, that entire pedigree lights up again. This is a filly with a huge residual as a potential broodmare.
Very much. Looking further up the list, who else did I mention this morning that caught my eye? Race Day said this is one of those kind of a personal thing that the sell-through concept, a horse that had 5 in the sale, 1 RNA, and then 4 that sold for 30, 50, 80, and 95. That's an indication that an under-the-radar stallion that is getting, you know, babies that are catching people's eyes.
Yeah, if you notice, the 95,000 one was bought by the Winchell, so, you know, a tap it. And Race Day is a tap it, obviously. You know, stands at Spendthrift. I think he was standing for like $7,000. This one's got some family to her too. And it's first foal of this dam. It's bred on that same cross, Steve, that's been so good for Tappet, which is Tappet with Stormcat. And this particular filly is by Race Day out of a Bluegrass Cat mare. Of course, Bluegrass Cat is by Stormcat. So you see how a lot of this stuff happens. This horse actually has a lot. Race Day is actually out of a More Than Ready mare, too, which is what we were talking about before. And the second dam of this filly, Marwood, produced Ready Signal.
Right.
Stakes winner by More Than Ready as well.
Is this, out of curiosity, because, you know, watching the Winchell operation and what DJ Fisk and the team, what they're going to be charged with. Gunrunner is obviously going to be entering stud here, and unique, I asked Ron Winchell this question. I mean, the circumstance that finds him now, you know, probably having to line up as many mares for Gunrunner as he takes to tap it. Is this a filly with that pedigree that is going to match up well down the road with Gunrunner?
Well, you know, I think Candy Ride, for example, the sire of Gunrunner, has done well with the AP Indy line. He's done well with the Stormcat line. And, of course, Tappet is an AP Indy line stallion. If this filly were to become a stakes winner or a stakes horse, yeah, absolutely, she's a candidate. And I think that's how probably a lot of these guys, you know, with big stud prospects buy, looking down the road.
You mentioned Palace Malice's presence, a pair of 250-plus sellers for him early in the day. Steve Young bought one for 250, Aaron Wellman, the other 275. And then there was another couple of $100,000 sellers, $100,000 McMahon and Bourbon Lane, 125, Contessa 100. So Palace Malice. And speaking of Palace, here's, first of all, there was the surprise to me, to some extent, said that a select sale like this, how about a total of 8 sons and daughters of Palace himself, and very much a strong sell-through for him as well. There were 3 RNAs, but 160, 140, 105, and a pair of lower-level private sales. And Palace looks like there may be something brewing, and there's a number of them.
One of them made 160.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was a top, you know, horse, you know, multiple G1 winner, sprinter, part of that dichotomy of City Zip. He's by City Zip. City Zip was could get you a turf horse, a route horse, and a sprint horse. Palace fit the sprint variety. I think there's, you know, again, at Spencer Farm, well-priced. You know, a lot of these horses, if you look at his horses, for example, the 160 was bought by Hartley Dorenzo. I think some of these mature speed type speed are bought with resale in mind for the next year's two-year-old sales. And I can, you know, this filly for $160,000, you can almost guarantee will be spun back, you know, and he had another one for $140,000. Quite a few of these, you know, one for $105,000 Woodford Thoroughbreds. That's a possibility of coming back as well. It makes sense because he's a speed, you know, type, and and these are mature yearlings, so we're likely to see quite a few of these back at the 2-year-old sales next year.
I'm going to give you, another one that I missed when I went through last night, and while I was monitoring and watching the results. Conveyance. Conveyance at Buck Pond. 4 in the sale, stands for a nickel, 20,000, 25, 50, and 85,000. 4 for 4, and trading a minimum of 4 times his stud fee, 10 times and more. That's an intriguing. He's who? And he's an Indian Charlie conveyance. Yes.
Yeah, he's an Indian Charlie. You know. I noticed also, I saw a photo of one in one of the ads in TDN, I believe. Really good-looking filly, too. I just thought, wow, how athletic, how well put together, really racy with, you know, great quarters and kind of a sexy look there. Conveyance, I remember him running as a racehorse, and he was, you know, he was a really good-looking horse. A speed horse who was, you know, stretched out, but an extremely good-looking horse. And, you know, with the success of Uncle Mo by Indian Charlie, there aren't too many around. Conveyance for nickel, you know, is a good, it's a good play, and especially with the physicals that he appears to be getting. He, as you point out, he's, you know, sold extremely well, especially that $85,000 filly on a $5,000 stud fee. Certainly a dark horse, even though he's a gray. He had another filly sell for $50. So these are all really, you know, pretty nice.
Going to ask you on this topic, actually, since we ended up in this corner, the news that Oscar Performance is going to get a chance at stud, and the entry into the marketplace in and of itself. What was your reaction to this news?
You know, it's funny how you always ask me something that ends up becoming my column for TDN.
Your wheelhouse. And folks, I didn't. This was not a setup. Go ahead.
No, it was. Yeah, but this is inevitably the case because I talk about it here, and then it appears in print in TDN. But yeah, for me, that's a big story. I'll tell you, I was at Craig Burnick's crawfish boil in March, which I've tweeted and written about a lot. But again, another place where I happened to sit next to Heedley Bell, who told me at the time that we were just chit-chatting about Mill Ridge in general. And I was asking about, when would they probably think about getting a type of horse, a commercial horse. Of course, they stood Desus and Gone West there, two major stallions. And he mentioned that, he and Price Bell, his son, were really interested in Oscar Performance. That was back in March. They have an advantage because the horse was foaled on the farm. He's owned by the owner breeders, the Ammermans, John and Jerry Ammerman, who board their mares there. The damn Divine Actress is there. And just recently he called me the day after July 4th. We spoke, and he told me that, the deal was, they had the deal done, and they were going to send the press release out that afternoon. It's a big thing for Mill Ridge. Mill Ridge now with Heedley Bell as the managing partner. Of course, his mother, Alice Chandler, she's 92. Storied farm. It's an exciting time for them to be able to get a Kitten's Joy. Right after that, Roaring Lion, another son of Kitten's Joy, won the Coral Eclipse. Not that Kitten's Joy needs any introduction, but it's always nice when you get something like that. And Oscar Performance is a full two Oscar nominated. Mare's first two foals. He's a better prospect. He's a more marquee horse. He's at the last mile of his, albeit on a hard track, was still, just ridiculous. He's one up to a mile and a quarter. He's a really legitimate prospect, Steve, and he comes from a family that traces back to the Pippses again, Lady Pitt. It's a great family, Blighty, the whole nine yards, and it's been touched by John maybe along the way. And it's a really good prospect, and it's in an environment now where this horse is a turf horse, but it seems like we have much more turf opportunity now, and there's no people aren't as hesitant anymore to stand a turf stallion, and this is a turf miler, a homegrown turf miler. Not only for the farm, but U.S. bred, raced here. But he's a horse that now potentially, Steve, is going to have some commercial interest for Europeans as well.
For a second, and it occurs to me that we only think of Mill Ridge, for the most part, in this era, as a boarding operation to some degree, and
right,
the home of some top brood mares, and any number of people that have utilized Doc Chandler and everything that goes on at Mill Ridge and what they're famous for. But bring us a little bit, Sid, the backstory in terms of their experiences with standing stallions, because it's funny, they have flirted, it seems. I mean, they've kind of come and gone and come back again a couple different times, I think.
Well, the most recent stallion they have is a small little horse, Keep Up, son of Unbridled, who's there. He was a small stallion that they gave him a shot there, and he's still there. Prior to that,
prior to him, they've had the trio of Johar, Commendable, and Anise. And all three of those, you know, Anise died, I believe, or, yeah, had a hepatic injury. Commendable and Johar, really, you know, they were really, for the most part, unremarkable. But just prior to those two were the duo of Dices and Gone West, a phenomenal stallion. Keep Up is by Unbridled Song. Sorry, not Unbridled. Those two, Gone West, of course, phenomenal stallion, and same with Dices. Both stallions had European appeal as well. Dices went to stud in this country primarily because his full brother, Chris, also by Sharpen Up, was in Europe, and it was a case of two full brothers becoming exceptional stallions. And of course, in the case of Gone West, just, you know, lit it up here. The line, of course, now comes down, still viable with horses like Quality Road, Spitestown. These are all Gone West line horses. So they've had a boutique commercial operation as far as stallions go. Mrs. Chandler, of course, Alice Chandler, who's this year, 2018, is the 50th anniversary of Sir Ivor, who she bred. Ray Guest, Epsom Derby winner for Vincent O'Brien. She's the first American woman, I believe, to have bred an Epsom Derby winner. There have been other women who have bred Epsom Derby winners, like I think right before her might have been Susie Volterra, but these are they're European. Susie Volterra, I believe, bred Phil Drake in 55. But Alice Chandler, Hal Price Heavey was her father. Of course, he, was a massive figure in the game and the creation of Keeneland and the importation of some important stallions. That farm was split up, and Alice Chandler got, I think something like 270 acres of the original, what was then the Beaumont farm property for her father. And she's created this entire thing as a horsewoman. And now her sons, by the way, Heavey Bell is a fifth generation horseman. So his son Price Bell is sixth. The Heavey and Price, of course, ran Nicoma Bloodstock, and now Heavey is the managing partner of Mill Ridge. So it's a long history of horse people in Kentucky, the same family. It's a great thing to see. Just like we talk about the Hancocks or other longtime families that are still in the game and still operating as horse farms.
Well, I thought that it was a note. I put that when I saw the Oscar performance news. I put it on the side to bring up with you. And speaking of, by the way, as we wrap up, speaking of horses that are going to get a try at stud, Fire Away, going to South Africa to stand, as it happens, Sid. And as I mentioned yesterday, recapping the Monday Horses of Racing Age portion of the sale, the world doesn't want our bloodstock, except when they do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just,
That, my favorite, my favorite pinata.
Yeah. No, it's too bad that that's used as a bogeyman or boogeyman in this Fed legislation dogfight. That's one of the things that's held up as beware. You know, we don't do this. Nobody's going to want our blood stock. But that's just not true.
No. FIP's blood throughout the world sought after. And there's your latest example. Sid, we're on the doorstep of the boutique season, Saratoga and Del Mar. We'll have, obviously, the yearling market at Saratoga to look forward to, and what's your schedule for coming up?
Well, I was thinking about coming up for the sale. I'm still considering it, but if I do, I need to take you out to dinner.
Yeah, absolutely, without fail, we'll get together. We're overdue for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I appreciate it. And when we talk Wednesday, it'll be opening day at Del Mar. So get ready for the Barrett's paddock sale, and we'll check in. Sid, I appreciate it. And for those that are getting ready, it's hard to believe we're into the second half of the year. You people have a good idea by now what they looked like, what you're happy with, what you want to improve on, and get out ahead of next year's breeding season, and create your relationship with Sid and Work Thoroughbred Consultants. 510-490-1111. Follow Sid Fernando on Twitter. And Sid, as always, appreciate it. Talk next week.
All right. Thank you. See you all. I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Just great. Top of the hour upon us, and looking forward to, in some ways, maybe the most impressive performance of the weekend. Conversation with Kellen Gorder, Red Ruby. I mean, in all the hubbub about everything in New York, and there was plenty to discuss. Obviously, yesterday with Rick Violette and Diversify's effort, and haven't really done a service to the Belmont Oaks, actually, Athena, and boy, you want to talk about a sinking feeling. You're watching it, you know, a horse that you looked at and you thought, the fillies are too good for the Euro here. And then you're watching in mid-stretch, you're thinking, ugh, this horse is going to blow by everybody, and she's not on a ticket, and you're a chicken in a pot. Or as Seth says, a parakeet in a cage. For canary in a coal mine. Yeah, a parakeet in a cage. Seth will be with us in this hour, too. We'll go over the pick six sequence at Belmont. $50,000 carryover today. Throw that in. And there's some very significant scratches, including in the sixth. A race we're going to participate in. We were going to scratch Carlisle Bell. It was a tough spot, and we just kind of entered because she'd been waiting for 3 weeks to run. What are you going to do? We've been looking for a 40 non-winners at two, but hasn't materialized. So we entered here. We're going to run. Why not? It's a tough spot, but she needs to run. But there's Okemo got scratched in the nightcap. It's going to make it hard to make a decision there. Two horses in the six. Take Charge Aubrey and Satisfy scratched, making things a little tougher. So we'll talk about that with Sid. But Kellen Gorder's next. Red Ruby, big romping winner in the Delaware Oaks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
fun in the sun is Express Bet Summer Treasure. If you can't make it to the spa or where the surf meets the turf, do the next best thing and play Saratoga and Del Mar with Express Bet. And while you're at it, don't miss Express Bet's $100,000 Fun in the Sun handicapping competition. Play Saturdays by making a live $10 win wager on one horse in each of 10 competition races. Each week, top players collect $4,000 for first, $2,000 for second, and $1,000 for third. Plus, based on cumulative earnings throughout the season, the top four finishers will win Pegasus World Cup Handicapping Championship seats, a $12,000 value each. Free registration is now open for account holders only. Don't miss this fantastic opportunity to shoot for some cool, fun-in-the-sun Saturday summer cash with ExpressBet Saratoga and Del Mar. Visit ExpressBet.com now to open an account and for complete fun-in-the-sun details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.